there, and welcome to the Violin Geek Podcast. I'm Laurel Thompson, and I'm here again with Jan Frechette. We're going to be sharing our Tour Stories Part 2 episode with you today, and we have a few special guests that we'll be sharing in a moment. So I'm going to keep going with the thematic sections, and if you didn't listen to Part 1, then definitely go check those out. We covered some really fun and crazy and funny stories, as well as some intense stories. We kind of left you off with some border stories that were really definitely some of the most intense moments in my life, but this one's going to have some more stories that I think you'll enjoy, and let's just dive in with this next topic I have, which is making a difference and staying open to possibility. So let's actually start in with one of our guests, and I got a chance to interview with her, and before that actually meet her for the first time, Kara Luft, who was a founding member of the Wailing Jennies, and she now tours with J.D. Edwards as the Small Glories. And it was just awesome to meet her because I've been a Wailing Jennies fan for many years. And let's go to her interview and see what she has to share. Hello, Kara Luft, and welcome to the Violin Geek Podcast. How's it going?
Hey, Laurel. Thanks so much for having me. This is great.
You are welcome. It's good to hear from you again. So tell us a bit about yourself, where you're from, and what kind of music you play.
I'm a Canadian folk singer-songwriter living in Winnipeg, Manitoba. I have been doing solo stuff off and on for many years and have been involved in a couple other projects. I was one of the founding members of a folk trio called the Wailing Jennies. I was with them for about 3 years. And my newest project is a duo project with another Winnipegger named J.D. Edwards, and we go by the name The Small Glory.
Awesome, and I was so happy to get to finally hear you guys recently when you passed through town, and just amazing, like, harmonies and blend, and it just blew me away, actually, just, like, the level of, I guess, how tight you guys were together and stuff, so...
Well, thank you, Laurel.
Yeah, it's amazing sometimes what duos can create. It's like a whole band, but it's just two people, so.
It is. It's an interesting thing, make it nice and big with just two people.
Yeah, I don't know. It's there's a certain magic there, I guess, with some connections. Yeah, so do you have a certain tour story that you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, I want to tell one that I actually like telling this story at shows sometimes. So there's this one gig where I was booked to play with my side guy at the time at a venue called Beavers. And I thought it was a really strange name for a venue. I thought, one beaver, two beavers? Why am I playing here? Is it because I'm Canadian or for other reasons? And we showed up at the venue, and it was like a hard rock cafe type venue. It seated maybe 300 to 400 people. It was huge. And it was decked out on the inside with all this rock and roll paraphernalia. And the promoter apparently really loved to collect this stuff. So we get there, and it's like a Monday or Tuesday night. You know, it's not an ideal gigging night.
Sure.
And the promoter comes up to me, and he says, "Hello, my name is Beavers." But I thought, again, a terrible name, but I didn't want to say anything to him. And he said, "I want to welcome you here, and I just want to tell you that no one will come to the show tonight." And I thought, okay, there's a translation problem. I asked him, "What do you mean nobody is coming to the show? Does that mean, like, no one he knows personally is coming to the show, or nobody that I know, or literally no one is coming?"
Right.
He said, they only come on the weekends for the cover band. And
okay.
I looked at him, and then I looked at my side guy, and I said, "Well, it's like a Tuesday night, and we book original folk music. Why did you hire us?" And he looked so proud, and he said, "Because I love original folk music." So we're like, okay, well, we get in there, you know, we set up, and we're doing our sound check, and I'm thinking to myself, well, there has to be more people in the audience than on stage for the show to go on. So in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, if, you know, 5 people come, then we're going to play.
Sure.
Well, there were about 7 people who came.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, okay, well, we're gonna do the best show we've ever done, you know, on a Tuesday night in the middle of nowhere in Germany at Beavers. So we do the show, and it was really interesting because – know, 16 hours in Canada or the States to
right.
go to a show. And he had driven 2 hours, and he had reserved the seats and tickets over the phone. So when he got there, he realized that nobody else was really there. And he realized he could sit anywhere he wanted to sit. So while we were playing, we just saw this guy after every song, he just moved one table closer and closer and closer and closer. And so he was sitting right up front of us. And it was actually the magical thing. Now, this guy is a super fan. He's been a fan of mine way long ago. Had all my solo stuff prior to the Waylon Jennys, and then all the Jenny stuff, and then all my recent solo stuff. And so in my mind, I thought, well, you never know who's going to come to your gig.
You totally.
He plays for seven people, and one of those seven people is the biggest fan you've got in the entire country, and he's just made their year.
Totally.
So that's one of my kind of favorite touring stories to share.
That's awesome, and it's such a good reminder for other musicians out there who might, you know, feel really horrible that only seven people showed up, and they might do a really bad show because they're so pissed off, but then at the end of the day, you never know who's sitting there, right?
I know.
You know?
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. That story kind of reminds me. Yeah. Have you ever, on Vancouver Island, there's a place called, I guess it's named the Duncan Garage Showroom, but people say it's the Duncan Garage No Showroom.
I've played there many, many, many times. And sometimes I wonder, why am I going back here again?
I know. Well, it's all the guy's cool paraphernalia stuff, right? There's.
I know. He's got a venue full of stuff. And
weird stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like he likes to take you around and show you the stuff, and it's almost like, I think I'm here just to have this guy show me this interesting, weird stuff.
Well, you know what happened? He had to leave the actual venue. Like, his lease ran out or something, and
he had
to find another space. And he ended up at the Holiday Inn, one
Whoa.
Of the reception rooms where they had, like, wedding receptions. But he still had all his stuff.
Oh, wow. That's new.
Yeah, it was really funny.
He's cool, interesting character. Yeah, you just never know what you're going to find, and you kind of have to be prepared for everything, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Well, tell us how people can find out more about you.
Well, they can go to my personal website is caraluft.com, CARALUFE, or they can go to thesmallglories.com, and that's the duo project with JD, and that seems to be my main focus these days. So most of my gigs, whether they're with the duo or solo, are listed primarily on the Small Glories website.
Okay, and it's the is in there as well, as in
T-H-E, yeah, is
in there.
T-H-E,
yes. Is there. Okay. The yes. Small Glories. And I'll have all of that written out as kind of a show notes area or whatever on the podcast.
Great.
So, yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Great.
And happy return to Canada.
Thank you,
and yeah, you're flying
I'm so
off
glad
to.
It worked so finally. I know. We were doing the tagging back and forth for a while there. But
that time
all
of year.
Is good now.
Yeah, awesome. Well, yeah, and good luck in Europe. You're flying out there next week, you said.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, next week. I think I'm like Tuesday, which is why I'm kind of freaking out going, oh my God, I gotta get back to Canada.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, and please give my love to Dana. And it was such a treat hanging out with you guys. It meant a lot. It meant a lot to us. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. So thanks again to Kara Luft for joining me and contributing. And I highly recommend you check out her music and The Small Glories. I got to, like I said, see them recently and was very, very impressed. Wonderful harmonies and songs and just really awesome. So we're going to talk a little bit about an experience we had. It was actually one of my favorite tour experiences, and it's definitely in line with making a difference and staying open. But we played the largest homeless shelter in North America, which is in Calgary, and I guess to date, it's kind of a sad thing actually, but it's probably one of our largest audiences to date. There was a few others that matched or were larger than this audience. I mean, we play a lot of house concerts, so, you know, they're not huge. But I want to say probably 200 to 300 homeless men, mostly men, some women. And, you know, they were all pretty much just down and out, heads down on the tables. It was kind of in this cafeteria room. And we were just going through our show, and we had a new CD out at the time, and we were just kind of playing songs from that and getting very little applause or response. And at one point, this guy was furiously kicking a door, and some people had to take him out. And, I mean, we weren't there to get applause or really, you know, it wasn't about us, right? It was about hopefully helping brighten some people's day, but it didn't even seem like we were really doing that for the most part. And at the end, there was a few people who came over, and there was this one girl in particular who was really thankful that we were there. And what was interesting was that the guy who'd booked the show for us, he said later, after she came in, was talking to us for a while, he said that she had been out on the patio having a smoke, and when she came in the door, she was all pissed off that we were there, and she was saying something like, you know, why do they have these musicians always coming in here? It's like we're in some old folks' home or something like that. And then he saw her, you know, listening and coming closer to us and sitting down, and just her whole kind of demeanor changing. So that was really powerful. I mean, she was a young girl. She had some scars on her face. She'd always obviously been through, you know, something. She'd been through a lot. And we left, you know, feeling like maybe we'd changed some people's lives, hopefully, in that day, you know, brightened their day. But for the most part, we were really, really drained, and we just felt like the energy had just been completely sucked out of us. And we had about a 2-hour drive to where we were staying that night. And we pulled into our lodging, and we were taking the bags inside, and I was in first, and then Dan was coming in behind me, and you just sort of called out, and you said, wait, Laurel, like, turn around, and...
Yeah, because what happened was I knew that Laurel had never seen Northern Lights, and...
And I'd been wanting to see Northern Lights that whole tour, and we'd been up in Canada for about 2 months at that point, in the winter, without any Northern Lights, and for a moment... The whole horizon was just this green ribbon of color, which was amazing. And we just kind of stood there and watched it, and maybe it was gone. Like, within a minute, it was gone. And we were in northern Alberta at that point, and went inside and just kind of felt recharged. It kind of felt like a big, nice thumbs up from the universe, you know, giving us back some of that energy we'd expended.
Yeah.
Never know what's going to happen. You had an interesting story when we were traveling down to North Carolina a few years ago.
Yeah, I remember there was a video that's on YouTube that you can find. It's got quite a few views on it. It was posted back in 2007, I think. In March 2007, I was down in Fountain, North Carolina, playing this really cool venue called the R.A. Fountain General Store. And that town, it was really cool back then to go there. It had a neat vibe to it. It's like a throwback kind of town. And there was a lot of, you know, really like more rural folks and really, you know, kind-hearted, nice people, like just really humble folks, you know. And so one guy, turns out that he liked to make videos of passing musicians. So he called me and said, you know, maybe tomorrow you can come to my garden and we'll do a video of you playing your song. And so I went there at 10 in the morning or something and played Horse and Buggy Rag. So if you look up Horse and Buggy Rag on YouTube, you'll see this video of me in, you know, in a really nice sort of foliage in the backyard playing and, you know, just waking up, but really getting going on the tune. And so the guy who taped it, his name is Cliff Nelson. And, you know, I basically what happened right after that video was made was I went back to Winnipeg, and my dad was really sick at the time. He was terminally ill, and he died about a year after that. Actually, no, later that year. That's right, he died about 6 months after. So I was at home, And I had a whole lot of tour commitments that were being booked for me. And I just didn't even want to look anyone in the eye. I was really depressed for quite a while. So I got a job at a curling club, which is curling as a game, basically. It's an Olympic sport. And I was just, you know, making time doing that for a living just to get by, and just kind of stepped out of the music for a little bit. Not making music, but just I wasn't touring. And at the time, I'd played Fountain a few times, and the people there really liked me and all that. So anyway, I stayed in touch with, you know, some folks like Cliff and the guy that books the venue there. He's a nice guy. So anyway, I was still in touch with them, but I wasn't going to tour because I was down. And anyway, fast forward to 2 years ago, and Laurel and I, we were finally going to go on tour out that way. And so anyway, I called them up and see if we could do a gig there. And they were like, sure, come on down. And we showed up. We'd driven like something like 6 hours or five. It was like a really out of the way gig. Actually, it was more out of the way than most of the gigs. I just thought, well, I really want to go to Fountain again and show Laurel. And I had such a good time there last time. I remember the first time I played there was this band called the Malpas Brothers that were playing the day before me. So I went a day early, and it basically was Hank Williams Sr.'s pedal steel player who was playing. And I'll never forget when I went and met him. His name was Don Helms. He's passed away now, but I met him, and he wound up telling me a story about, you know, all these stories about Hank Williams. Like, he was in his touring band and he played on all his records. And in fact, when you listen to Hank Williams Sr. music, you're going to hear more of Don Helms than you're going to hear of anybody else, right? So it was a really special time, you know, back then to go there and experience that. And there was a full house, you know, it was a really good venue. The Fountain General Store is really cool. So that was a cool experience. I just thought, you know, I'm going to go back there. And I took a look at the schedule to see maybe they had some other great band playing the day before we were. And anyway, there wasn't. It was turned out we were the only act playing all month. And that was kind of surprising because when I'd gone there before, it was pretty much every night there was music. So we were one of the few bands in the whole month that was there. And so when we pulled into Fountain, it was really sad because the 2008, like, I mean, I hadn't been there since 2008. And I guess that recession really hit there. There was boarded up houses everywhere.
Huge mansions.
Mansions.
Like, completely just boarded up, broken windows.
Broken glass all over the streets. Buildings boarded up, like, you know, closed down, for sale signs everywhere.
I can remember, like, the downtown. I think there was only, like, the...
A liquor store.
The liquor store and this general store, which is only open sometimes, and it's not really like a food type general store. It's more like, I don't know, like old memorabilia and stuff.
Yeah,
like
that, right? The general store, the Fountain General Store.
The Fountain General Store. And then there was...
Music venue.
There was some kind of like urgent care, doctors on duty clinic or something like that. And that was pretty much it. And then everything else was just completely shut down.
So we walked in the venue and, you know, we were greeted. And it was really nice to see everyone again. And then I saw Cliff show up, you know, and that was great to see him again. I hadn't seen him in, you know, since 2007. So he wasn't doing so well either. It's really sad to see that he'd had a really hard time. He wasn't able to get a job for years. You know, like he's a really qualified person and quite educated and just really down and out. And, you know, and we played our show and he filmed us, you know, and he made a video of a song called Love Will Leave You Where You Belong. And he put it on YouTube later on. And, you know, it was really bittersweet to be there. There was only 5 or 6 people that showed up, but it seemed like the people that did come, it was really special because one guy showed up and I've never seen more of my albums. Like, I have a whole, like, 20 albums I've released over the years, and I've never seen somebody with more copies of my records probably in my life. And this guy had every album I'd made, pretty much all these hard copies, and a lot of them aren't in print, right? So I'm like, wow, I haven't seen, like, you know, this particular copy of this album in like 10 years. And he wanted me to sign all his records. And he said that my music had really helped him through his hard times. And then Cliff also, which was probably the most important encounter in my whole career, because I caught up with him a bit after, and he admitted that he was actually considering suicide. And when he'd heard that we were returning to come play, he decided not to. And he also decided to, after our show, he told us that he's going to use it as a inspiration, you know, because he saw that, you know, 7 years had gone by and, you know, he said things do come around, you know, good things come back. So it was a really special experience to do that, you know, and go all the way to Fountain, North Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, that was probably the most extreme show like that where, you know, but similar to Karolef's story there, you know, where there's maybe just a few people in the audience. I mean, you do your best show and like all of those people are there for a really important reason and it's really meaningful to them.
Well, that's the thing I always think, you know, like there's a lot of people, some people get on stage and then they get kind of pissed off because there's only three people in the crowd or four people. But you got to look at it from their point of view because they're not looking at the other three or four people.
It's true.
They're looking at you, you know, they're looking at the entertainer. And I find that, you know, like they deserve the 1,000-person show, you know.
Right.
Especially if they're paying to get in and they're listening, you know. I mean, if they're not listening or they're not paying, then I don't know. Then I just start to tune out and play some, you know, folk songs for myself. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's really important to factor that in, that they're not looking at it from your perspective, you know.
That's true. Well, you have another story I'd like you to share where you started off with a pretty good sizable audience and then it kind of petered out.
Yeah.
Tell us about that story.
What happened was I graduated from high school in 1994 and I had this thing called, in Canada, I don't know if they have it everywhere, but they call it the Safe Grad Party. Safe Grad means that basically it's us all drinking our faces off as 17-year-olds with a bunch of adults around.
Here they call it, I think they have sober grad. We had sober grad where you go and I don't know what you do because I didn't go, but you don't drink.
Oh, we drank. I drank a lot. I didn't drink much when I was a kid. And, you know, I just thought, okay, I'm graduating. I'm finally done with this crap. And I'm going to have a great time. So I went and I had a safe grad party and it was like I went and bought a Mickey of Southern Comfort, right? So I was just, you know, on that I was hammered because I don't drink anything. So I drank the stuff straight out of this little Mickey bottle. And, you know, I don't remember much, you know, it was like 4 a.m, I think, when I was getting driven home by an adult, you know, and then all of a sudden I, you know, as I was in the party, I'd totally forgotten that I had a gig the next day. And back then there was this organization called the Manitoba Audio Recording Industry Association called MARIA for short. And MARIA had this, you know, this Canada Day concert that was going to happen in Minneapolis. And so I was excited, you know, I'd never been to the States to play a gig in my life. And I was just, you know, going to go down there and play some music. And there was other band called the Weird Sisters and a band called the Blue Meanies, which became the New Meanies. And I'm still friends with some of the members in that band all this time later. It's nice to see people that, you know, in my memory bank and I'm like, oh yeah, I remember there was a time when I just met them and, you know, it's cool anyway. But the end of the day, it's like that was the night where I drove down all the way with my mom and my brother. They got me up out of bed at 7 a.m. and my hair was all over the place. I was hungover like you wouldn't believe. I'd only slept 3 hours. And Ron said, my brother, he's like, you got to get in the car. We got to go, you know. So they put me in the back seat and I was so out of it that I was laying down in the back seat with my feet out the window when we got to the border. And this is pre-2001, right? This is back when you just needed a license, you know, or whatever, and you can get over the border. It wasn't any passport or any of that weird stuff. And now it's, you know, you would not even go to the border unless you're ready, you know? So anyway, back then it was like just all of a sudden the car stopped and there's this border guard going, who's that in the back seat? And my mom is like, my brother's wearing a headband because I guess that was kind of his style then. So they thought he was a biker. They thought he was like a criminal or something. And they they just really stopped us for like a good hour talking. They asked my mom if she'd ever had a gun. and they asked her, where is your husband? It was just really intense. And basically, they found out I'd done my safe grad party the night before and I had a show. My brother said, yeah, he's a singer-songwriter, and I had my guitar in the trunk. And right then, they pulled us right out of the car because a musician, you know, who's got his feet out the window. So anyway, it was a little bit annoying, and I had to tell them that, yeah, and it's called Maria Manitoba Audio Recording Industry. And back then, there was no internet, so they couldn't look it up. And I said, you know, I had the phone number on this printout itinerary for the person running the thing, and she was in Minneapolis already. So I had them call her, and then she'd confirmed it all. And I remember the guard saying, yeah, this he seems very drunk, this young kid, and he's coming to play a show. and I heard some laughter on the other end, and I guess she, you know, laughed along. And it was just like a really good thing that that number was in our possession. So we wound up getting through the border. Then we get down to Minneapolis. My brother's yelling at me because I can't seem to read the map correctly, and I'm getting all the turnoffs wrong. And my brother's like, you just graduated high school and you can't even read a bloody map. And he's yelling at me. And it was just really funny. And then, so anyway, we get there, and I was supposed to be the first act to play. And I'd showed up probably around 5:30. And, you know, it was one of those really big places called the Fine Line Music Cafe. I think it's still around. It's been an established venue for many years. And we were booked to go play there, all us four acts. And then what happened was, and I guess this in this pre-internet era, I don't know how word of mouth got around, but it turned out that we had an unexpected opening act for our Canadian showcase that night. And it was a thrill because I'd never heard him before. I'd heard his music a little bit, but all of a sudden I walk in the venue and there was no sound check for us. They basically said, yeah, you guys can't sound check. Sure. Unfortunately, we have this last minute gig. It came through like yesterday, and there were 350 people there.
Nice.
And we thought when we first walked in that all those people were there to see the Canadians play, and not at all. In fact, they were there to see Leon Redbone.
Ah.
And so Leon Redbone was on stage playing, and he had a cornet player. He had a tuba for a bass and him on acoustic.
Cool.
And a clarinetist. And it was like so awesome. It was like listening to 1920, you know, and just amazing. And then the minute he was done his set, I think he played like one set, he was gone. And I went backstage to try to meet the guy because I'm a big fan already. And I couldn't find him. And basically some guys were saying, yeah, he does that. He does these like disappearing acts and nobody knows where he went. So I was like, okay. So anyway, I get my 12 string out and it was out of tune because it'd been in the trunk in late June, you know, or July or whatever. And so I'm tuning my guitar and they said, okay, go on stage now because, you know, we want, you know, you to try to keep this crowd, you know, because there's like 350 people there. And when they saw me get out on stage, basically there was about probably 350 people. And I think I watched while I was tuning my guitar and doing sort of a sound check at the same time, I watched about 325 people leave. So it was insane. I never, like, I'm here, I'm tuning, we're ding, ding,
12
ding, ding.
Strings, so it ding, takes ding. A while.
You know, I'm tuning my guitar and I'm watching, like, hundreds of people leaving. I'm just going, hi, I'm Dan Frechette, I'm from Manitoba, and I'm hungover, right? And I'm totally hungover. And I graduated last night. And anyway, you can actually hear this recording.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's on my Bandcamp. If you look up Dan Frechette, 1994 live in Minneapolis. It's my first, yeah, that whole entire gig is documented. A guy came up to me after and gave me a recording of it, like a DAT tape, and said I taped the whole thing. And I said, wow. And it was me with a 12 string guitar, hungover for probably the first time ever on stage and talking to the crowd. And there was only like maybe 10 people left, and it was really funny. And then, you know, I had a little sound hole pickup that sounded terrible. And it was just really...
So if you want to hear Dan at his worst, it sounds like...
No, it's not a bad gig. I was playing... See, I think back then, just being that age and you know, I was excited to be there. I think there was a lot of good in that recording, I think.
Yeah, totally. That's awesome. We're just going to keep it on you here for a little while, if you're cool with that.
Yeah, as long as all the listeners are okay with it.
Dan's taking over the podcast.
Yeah.
No, good stuff. Well, you often like to tell this story at some of our shows about how you were a bit of a matchmaker, unpurposeful matchmaker. Is that a word? I guess so.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a... Okay, well, there's this venue in Winnipeg called the Folk Exchange, and it's kind of run by the Winnipeg Folk Festival, and, you know, they would have me come in and play, you know, once every few years I'd go and play, and I was excited. It's a little intimate venue, and it's really nice. It's down on Bannatyne and Main Street, if you're ever down there sometime tomorrow or whatever. So anyway, basically, I'm really excited to play this gig, and it's a really good show, and you can wind up promoting the crap out of it, and CBC promotes it too, and, you know, so it's a really nice gig to get. And, you know, super nice, like almost like a coffee house kind of place where everyone's listening and nice chairs and tables set up and, you know, a really casual vibe. And they serve coffee in the break and, you know, nice gig. So I was excited to play that. And I got this show and I set up my guitar and I'm getting ready to tune up. And this is back in 2007, I think it was like 2006 or seven. And I was single then, and, you know, I was just like completely blown away, you know, because it's one woman. I'd seen her around a few times and I was really, really attracted to her. I just thought she's a gorgeous woman. Name is Michelle. And I was just like, oh, Michelle's here, you know, beautiful lady. And you know, I was just thinking, she's like watching the show and she's giving me all these like admiring kind of looks and stuff all through the gig. I'm just like, oh, wow, this is so cool. So I thought I'm going to talk to her the second I'm off stage, right? Maybe I'll sell a CD or something and go to talk to her. So anyway, people were buying my CDs and I was selling three, whatever CDs. And then I went to go and talk to her and then I got sidetracked and basically somebody else talked to me and I wasn't able to talk to her. So I got back on stage and played another set. And then I'm looking and I saw some guy come in at the very, you know, halfway through the set. And I guess he was late. I don't know. I didn't know this guy. And he sat down next to her and because there was no other spaces for him to sit. And he's sitting there with her and I'm just like, okay, whatever. And then when the show was done, I was once again selling CDs and visiting and there was a lot of people I knew. So, you know, and then I saw them talking out of the corner of my eye and I was like, oh, you know, and they looked like they were hitting it off. And I was just like, oh, that kind of irks me slightly, you know, because I really wanted to talk to her. And then I didn't make much of it. I did get to say hi and wave and take off. And then about 3 years later, I got a gig again at the Folk Exchange. And I was just thinking, okay, that's cool. I'll go play there again. And I had a whole batch of new songs, so I showed up and got ready to play. And then I looked in the audience and I saw some people I knew and I was like, that's cool. And then I noticed Michelle was there. And it was really something because there was this guy with her sitting next to her and there was like this baby stroller that they'd brought in with them. And I was just like, oh, okay, I haven't seen her in 3 years. You know, I didn't know what happened to her. And so I had just got my guitar set up and I was like, oh, I'm going to go talk to her now. And this time around, I actually went off the stage and talked to her right away. And I said, how you doing, Michelle? I haven't seen you in a long time. She's like, she wanted to introduce me to her, you know, her husband. And I'm like, that's great. I didn't know you even got married. She's like, actually, we met at your last show here 3 years ago. And he came in late during, and I'm like, yeah, I know. I remember watching him walk in late. So anyway, it turns out that they got married. They had one of my songs as their wedding song because they met at my gig. And then they'd had their baby and they wanted to introduce me to their baby. So this is like the kind of thing you don't see every day. You know, you'll sell a CD to someone and you'd never really hear from your audience. You're not going to hear someone write you the next day and go, hey, I put your CD on and really loved it and all that. And, you know, I kind of joke around sometimes. I just go, you know, you never know. Like, is someone going to go home and make a baby to this CD? Is somebody going to get married to someone they met when they bought your CD? I have no idea. It's just like this amazing possibilities, you know. And
sure.
I was so impressed with that story, you know. Like,
Yeah, totally. Like,
wow.
I'm glad it turned out for them.
Yeah, and they're together. I see them on Facebook, and, you know, it's really cool. You know, it's really amazing. You know, they have three kids now, so it's awesome.
So far, you know.
It was a good gig.
So far, your matchmaking efforts are going pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a good...
Come to one of our shows. You might meet your future spouse there.
Yeah, and you might make a child to our CD. You never know.
Well, I guess, yeah, I don't know. Or just enjoy it in your car or at home.
Yeah.
I'll take that. Anyway, we're going to pop over to kind of a different topic. Still, I don't know, still kind of staying open to possibilities topic. But basically, what is life on the road? Because we've told a lot of these stories, but I thought it would be... good to talk about what the day-to-day is like, and, you know, it's kind of a lifestyle. And to kick that off, I have some friends, a wonderful duo, Maria Keyless and Rory Cloud. They go by Keyless and Cloud, and they're based out of San Francisco, and they'll talk about themselves and all of that. But they're going to kick us off here on this topic with some experiences that they have on the road and how that goes for them. Enjoy. Hello and welcome to Keyless and Cloud. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. And tell us a bit about your music and your style.
We are based out of San Francisco, and our project is primarily an acoustic-based group, kind of in the Americana or modern folk vein. And two of us met in the city about 4 years ago and kind of jumped in at first and have been playing together nonstop ever since. And we work with a handful of other musicians throughout the Bay Area, an upright bassist named Oscar Westison, and friend of ours named Julian Muller, doing three-part harmony with us on certain recordings, certain shows.
Awesome. And we'll get to your website and how people can find you in a minute, but for now, do you have a tour story to share with us?
Well, you know, we spend a lot of time on the road. I mean, this year we were gone for 8 months, not consecutively, but accumulative 8
yeah.
months. And do you have something?
I didn't have anything specific, actually. You know, there's just so many, it turns into a big blur. But we tour around kind of using this service called Couchsurfing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've heard of that. But,
yeah, totally.
That is kind of something special that really supports the touring and supports a life of kind of community awareness that we really love. And every experience, I mean, I can't really think of something off the top of my head right now. But,
this particular year, one of the things that's been really great for us as independent musicians going out with little to no contacts generally is that we've just sort of witnessed each time we go out and put ourselves into these new situations, new places, in front of new people, opportunities come up that we never would have expected.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times just as a result of us being in different places, you know, and
totally.
So, you know, even though it's been sort of challenging to, you know, it's always challenging for artists to survive, but at the same time, you know, there is that supportive community aspect through things like Couchsurfing that allow us to sort of travel cheaply. And then, you know, something that has come up over the last couple of years is we got introduced to this community in the Northeast. I know we were talking earlier about the Northeast specifically, and we got introduced to this music festival called Fresh Grass.
Mm-hmm.
In Western Massachusetts. And they were doing a duo contest, so we entered in 2014, and we won, and as a result got connected with this woman named Allison Brown, who's a great banjo player and a producer based out of Nashville. Her and her husband Gary West run a record label called Compass Records, and you know, this whole thing came together because we were trying to book shows in the Northeast, and somebody pointed us in the right direction, and now we just finished up this brand new recording with those guys in Nashville at the Compass Sound Studios. and we're releasing that new record. It's called Beyond the Rain on January 29th. And then we're celebrating the release of the Freight and Salvage in Berkeley on the 28th of January.
That's awesome. Yeah. So all of that just sort of flowing from like one thing to the next and kind of finding yourself in different areas where people are supportive and, you know, then moving on and, oh, now this person wants us to do this and this is happening and it's just growing and building. That's really awesome.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it's definitely inspiring to know that does happen.
So what's your mindset when you go out on the road and, you know, like you said, you don't really know exactly what's going to happen. And
well, we generally book out, you know, we are scheduled across the country and we kind of book things out. And so we know where we're going and we have a goal and a plan. And so the mindset is just, it's an open mindset. We know that we're going to encounter a ton of things that we can't plan for.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of something that I've become addicted to. I think it's a pretty addictive feeling to sort of leave your comfort zone mm-hmm. and go out into the unknown.
Right.
I guess the unknown has become more and more known to us, though, as we do this.
Yeah, well, there's kind of strange sort of duality there where, you know, I'm more prepared for the unknown, I suppose. So it's, you know, in a way it's known, but there's still new experiences every time we go out.
Yeah.
Totally.
You can accept that, but it's not, it is funny how after years and years it becomes sort of like, oh yeah, this highway again, it's this gas station and that dude, and yeah, so again.
Recognizing rest stops all over the country.
Totally. Yeah. You're like, oh yeah, I get to go to that place.
Yeah. We'd be there.
People ask me, they're like, oh gosh, that sounds like the most exhausting life. I can't imagine doing that. And I bet you guys get that as well. How do you respond or what do you think when people say that?
I say that I sort of thought it was going to be that way when I started out as well. And I have sort of an introvert personality, but it is invigorating. I think that sort of open-minded frame that you get when you're doing something like this is, it kind of makes you continue that sort of spark inside of yourself, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally.
And it is exhausting too. You know, it has its, you're packing the car, you're unpacking the car, you're packing the car, you're unpacking the car, you're going, doing, and, but having worked, you know, normal quote unquote jobs to just survive in the city for many years before I did this, I know that that is equally exhausting. And it's not doing something that I love. So now that I'm doing something that I love and I'm working hard at it, I feel actually more energized.
Mm-hmm.
The lifestyle is definitely not for everyone. And Rory and I really enjoy traveling, so we kind of get off on it, you know. And I think that it wouldn't be, I think you just have to have the desire and the mindset for it to really work out.
Yeah, and it really pushes you, like you were talking about, going outside your comfort zone. And that's really true and sort of many different facets, you know, just even in the sense of going to different parts of the country where it's culturally different, you know, you kind of have to, you learn to kind of see past certain things that we often sort of view as differences and kind of, you know, you find ways to relate with people on a deeper, I think, you know, more honest and genuine kind of level, you know, just on a human level.
Right.
So yeah, that is worth the exhaustion in and of itself.
It's like it kind of forces you to be in the moment, being present with people and situations and society and right there in that moment. And
totally.
Well, you guys obviously travel very well together, and that's a blessing, right?
Yeah, it definitely is.
And how
we
can
have our own everybody? It's a good situation.
Awesome. And how can people find out more about you?
Our website is sort of the most centralized way to get to everything else, which is thebandname.com. So that's qsncloud.com, which is spelled QUILESANDCLOUD.com.
Awesome.
And we're on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and Spotify and iTunes and all that stuff as well.
All those good places. And your new CD is coming out soon. Tell us again the name and how people can find that.
And the name of the record is Beyond the Rain. You can find, I think, some links on our website right now. They're, Compass Records is...
distributing it.
Yeah, they're distributing the record, and it's available for pre-order now through Compass Records' website. So I'm blanking on their website. I think it's Compass Records Group.
Okay.
.com. But if you Google Compass Records, yeah, you'll find them. And also, if you go to our website, I believe that there's a link on our homepage to the pre-order.
Awesome.
So it's Beyond the Rain. It's a trio recording that we did in Nashville with our bassist, Oscar. And it's five original tunes and five traditional, I suppose four traditional and one Bob Dylan tune.
Nice. Awesome. I'm really looking forward to checking that out. You have any closing thoughts or words?
Just we have a release show in Berkeley at the Fringe Salvage on the 28th of January. Putting that out there.
Awesome. Well, anyone who's in any sort of close distance should definitely be there. And this will come out before then, so they'll be able to hear about it.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for joining me. So thanks again to Keyless and Cloud for coming on the podcast and sharing some insight into their touring lifestyle. And it definitely is a lifestyle. And like they said, you know, you just never really know what you're going to meet out there on the road. And while, you know, a lot of people who aren't used to that might think it's really exhausting, it can be really, I don't know, energizing. And it really makes you feel like you're really living, I guess. And it's a lot of hard work. So I guess where Dan and I are now in our career as a duo, you know, we've been doing pretty well here the last 3 years. But, you know, we spend a lot of time booking the shows and getting everything set up and figuring out the route and figuring out, you know, where we're going to stay and where we're going to eat and, you know, just sort of like the day-to-day stuff. And certainly in Canada, there's a lot more space between venues, so we might be driving 5 to 7 or 8 hours a day and then playing a show and expecting to be on, you know, the audience expects you to be on, like you just got a good night's sleep and here you are all fresh and ready to go. And it's definitely sort of an interesting lifestyle.
Yeah, we've changed our outfits in the car a few times.
Oh yeah, you know, it's like, here, you drive so I can change my clothes and get ready. You know, most of the time I'm wearing like yoga pants and stuff that's comfortable in the car. And then it's like, okay, now you drive so you can change into your clothes and put on a better shirt or whatever.
Yeah, because we only have like a 20-minute window to get there and get ready and sound check and all that. So
it's really tight. I mean,
it's tight. Yeah. And you know, you tell the host, you're like, I'm the kind of guy where I like to say, you know, if you hear from us, something went wrong. So I don't really have the time to call the people every day. Like half the time you get up and you want to visit with your host that you stayed with that night, and then the night before, I mean, and then talk to them and have breakfast, and you don't really want to excuse yourself at all because it's the only time you'll see them all year, you know, and then you're going to excuse yourself to go make a phone call. So I generally say I'm going to call if there's something going wrong, so that we leave and then we have our exact amount of time, you know, barring traffic, which there isn't any in Canada, really, Trans-Canada, and hardly ever traffic.
No traffic there.
So you know that you got a three-hour drive, you're going to do 300 kilometers, and you're going to get there at 3:30 or whatever. And, you know, and then we'll stop in our favorite place, because we have such a limited selection of food that we eat. So, you know, we have a few places like this place called the India House in Regina, you know. we'll eat there every time because it's the only food between there for us and maybe Swift Current or whatever. It's kind of like we don't have a whole lot of choices, and we tend to eat a lot of sushi. We eat a lot of Indian food. And
we use Yelp a lot to
Yelp is
help
good.
Us sort you know. Out where open now vegetarian restaurants are. What's become very cool about our touring at this point is we have these kind of circuits set up, and the Canadian circuits, Western Canadian circuits, kind of the most established for us at this point based on really Dan's past touring there. But you know, returning to these places where you feel like you're going back home, and these people that you've stayed with and played for, you know, at this point, some of them 3 or 4 times. And that's just really special. And it was interesting today, actually, we got a message from a lady in very high north in BC and British Columbia, and we're going to be passing through there this coming summer. And she was so disappointed that she was going to be out of town when we're passing through. And you know, it is very heartbreaking when the people that you expect aren't there. And you know, if you can't route the tour through that town where you have these fans and these friends. And so at this point, we're pretty much basing our tours off of, you know, where are the most awesome people?
And at the most awesome time, like we tend to, I've come up with
time of the year. We're not doing Canada in the winter anymore.
Well, I've come up with this.
We don't have to.
Well, yeah, I've come up with this idea of making a map calendar so that basically every, you know, March we're going to be in this part of the world, and every April we're going to be there, and every May, you know, and just building up from there, because I think people like to have something that's, you know, has a certain consistency, and here's us, you know, and every year we're going to do this at the same time. And I think it makes a lot easier too to field, you know, certain people if they're contacting us looking for us to play a gig. Then we look on the map calendar and go, well, we're not going to really be in that part of the world until this time. And then it just makes it easier to organize, because I don't want to be randomly touring. It's way too hard on the spirit to just be like, well, all of a sudden, you know, we're going to spend July in southeastern U.S. instead of where we usually are, which is up in the prairies in Canada, right?
Yeah.
So you just get used to it and you become familiar with it. You don't want to shake things up too much, you know,
just,
geographically.
Yeah, trying to manage the travel portion, because at this point, you know, we're doing some tours where we're flying and renting a car. We're doing others where we're driving. For a while, Dan's car was in Canada, so we had a Canadian car, and then we had a U.S. car, and we would, you know, tour in whatever country we're going to in that particular car. And, yeah, just kind of trying to make it work in a way that makes the most sense. But, I mean, some of our gigs, they get booked out. We have some bookings into 2017 at this point, and the map calendars really helped to frame those gigs at a time when, like, we know that we're going to be there and we can kind of flesh out the rest of the tour later on. Because in the beginning, we were just sort of saying, like, well, nothing's open, you know, or we have an open calendar in this particular month, so let's just put that there. I mean, I remember we had, like, a Nashville, Tennessee house concert that just kept on getting, like, rebooked every 6 months for, like, 2 years. Because we were never actually going to be there at that time. And that was just so silly, you know, that kind of stuff. So this has been a lot better.
We also tend to book our lives so that we have, like, 6 weeks, you know, 6 to 8 weeks off at home in between the month or so tours that we have. Like, I don't really want to be on the road much longer. Laurel and I both don't want to be on the road much longer than 5 weeks at a time. After that, it starts turning into, like, almost this, like,
this odyssey.
Twilight Zone or something, you know?
Well, yeah, this last winter we did 2.5 months in Canada. We played, what, I think we did 45 shows within the first 3 months of the year, which was crazy.
Driving on ice every day and just, you know, and I'm just like, man, we got to reset our calendar so that we're going to come through here when it's not too buggy and not too muggy and not minus 30, so we managed to pull that off, and I think that'll be pretty good for the future, you know, and we'll see how it goes. So far, we have a good summer coming up.
Good spring and summer.
Yeah, decent enough, you know.
Heading out to the Southwest next week, so it's will be good.
Yeah, see, we booked it now, so February or January and February, we're going to be down in New Mexico and Texas or whatever down there, you know, so hopefully that works out okay.
So I wanted to just sort of wrap up here. It'll probably take us a bit of time to wrap up, seeing how it's gone so far, but with some favorite experiences and just some kind of highlight touring experiences. So one of them that stands out in my mind is when we were up in Canada last winter on that big long Odyssey tour, and we were in Hudson's Hope, which is pretty far north British Columbia. And we'd been seeing all these moose signs, moose crossing everywhere. And I really wanted to see a moose. I'd seen one moose in my life, and that was many years ago in Yellowstone. And I really wanted to see a moose, especially since there's all these signs. And Dan kept saying, like, no, we don't want to see a moose, because if we see one on this road, we'll probably be dead. And we're getting towards the end of that particular leg of the tour and still hadn't seen a moose. And we're playing this house concert in Hudson's Hope, and somebody afterwards, we were talking to them, and this guy was saying how if when we're driving out of town the next morning,
If you look to the right about a mile past this meadow lake,
I think it was, yeah.
Anyway, there's supposed to be a lot of moose.
He's like, you'll see a moose if you look to the right. And sure enough, we got up the next morning, drove out of town, and we saw this kind of clearing area. Yeah, I can't remember if it was a meadow or a lake, but in any case, we saw the landmark and looked over to the right, and there was a moose right there. And we got a photo, and if you go to our Facebook page, it's Dan and Laurel, you can go find us. And we posted that photo. It's a little bit pixelated. He was a little far away. We got out of the car, and as soon as he saw us, he started trotting away. But yeah, that was pretty cool. And then actually down the road, not too much further, I think it was maybe the next day, we actually saw a moose on the roadway and got a little clip of the video as he was kind of jumping over the guardrail.
I remember driving in around Jasper. It was on the way between Jasper and Banff, and I saw two elk, like really large elk. Mm. They're really big, you know, they're enormous. And they were running along on the highway in front of the car.
Oh, man.
And, you know, that's the kind of thing where you got to really watch, because they can turn on a car. If you're going 10 miles an hour behind the elk, they could turn on you and, you know, it could be really bad. So, yeah, I just slowed down and stopped and waited for them to run away. And that was pretty cool.
And then you had a story. A few years back, someone in France had picked up your CD.
Oh, yeah, that story was amazing, because I had an album out called Lucky Day for many years. And, you know, I released it, and the people who had worked with it at the time had sent it around to a lot of different places. And somehow a copy had wound up at Sam the Record Man in Toronto. And then this guy who was traveling from France, from Paris, saw it in the store, and my name's French, so I guess he thought I was French or something, and he bought the CD, fell in love with it, and he's in Vincennes, France, you know. So I got this email one day, and it was like in 2010, and I think it was like January 2010, and I got this email, and it's all in French, like I couldn't understand it. And my mom and dad, well, actually my dad was not around, my mom was the one that helped me translate it. And it was just like really some guy asking if I would come to France and play a concert at this author's festival called Festival d'America, and basically be like one of the few bands that were playing over the weekend. It was like just maybe four bands and like 80 authors, you know, mm-hmm. from all over the world. And, you know, I thought it was a hoax. Like I just looked at it, and, you know, you have your spam folder and your email and that kind of thing. I just thought, oh, it just seems like this can't be true, you know, and believe it. So I just kind of ignored it. And then about two weeks later, I got another message, this time in English, from the same guy.
Okay.
And he's writing and saying, you know, I don't know if you received my last message. I want you to come play this concert in France, please call me. And it was like some long number. I'd never seen numbers from France where it's like 0018, you know, it's like long number. I didn't understand. I was like, oh God. So anyway, I didn't even want to call. I just thought, this guy's got to be. And then what really made me think it was a hoax was when he said it was like going to be 5,000 euros. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, this can't be true. He wanted my, some of my identification stuff so he could process a payment for me. And I just thought it was all wrong. I just thought, this has got to be a lie.
Guys.
Yeah. And I ignored him again for another month. And then a month later, he writes me again and he's like, I hope you will come and play Lucky Day. And that was when I was like, wait a second, this guy's actually talking about my record. He's talking about music I've made. So that's when I got a hold of him. And sure enough, it wasn't, you know, BS. It was real. This guy wanted me to fly to Paris and he was going to pay my flight. He was going to give me 5,000 euros. He wanted me to replicate Lucky Day. Exactly the same. He says, do you know a bass player? Do you know a fiddler? And at the time, I'd just become friends with Patty Kosterok, who actually is on another podcast on here. That was back when I first met her. And I only had met her, actually. I hadn't even really played with her yet. I'd only, her and Jeremy, who are good friends, and they were just met then, too. And, you know, they hadn't even really played together yet. So I thought, I'm going to get Jeremy on bass, I'm going to get Patty on fiddle. Okay, that's going to be good music, I'm sure. I can't get the original people who played on it because, well, Tanya Elizabeth,
who we also had,
yeah, was the other person that she played on it.
Yeah.
And Gilles Fournier was, you know, very busy, and Tanya was off somewhere touring. So I had to get Patty and Jaron. So it was really funny. I called Patty and I said, and, you know, there's this town called Paris in Manitoba. And mm-hmm. she's like a fiddling grandmaster fiddle champion. So she's played all the little towns in Manitoba, and she's played all these, like, you know, like little town sort of, what do they call them? Like a community centers, like all over,
like for dances,
Manitoba. Yeah. Like old time dances and stuff. So anyway, I said to her, Patty, this is Dan Frechette. I met you a month ago. I want to know if you want to play Paris with me. And she said, sure. Should I bring the PA system? And I just said, well, I don't think this is going to, I don't think we can bring a PA. We'll probably get out there and rent one. And she says, well, I can't imagine there'd be a PA rental place in Paris. And I said, no, you have me wrong. It's Paris, France. And then she was blown away. That's like the first gig I ever offer her is Paris, France. So, and then Jeremy was on board right away because he had, you know, him and Patty were very interested in playing music together. They were very, you know, at the time, well, they still are very excited to play with each other, but it was just, it was new, and these people are like amazing to play. Like they play amazing together. It's like a really once in a lifetime kind of synergy they have. And so anyway, that was one of their first gigs together, was playing with me in Paris, and we flew out there. Actually, I traveled in Europe a few weeks before they did, before they got there, and I met them, and they brought my guitar with them, and I had my ukulele the whole 2 weeks I was there traveling around. And I got there and we played the show. And when we got on stage, it was cool because it was like, here we are playing, you know, Lucky Day, the whole album in its entirety. And we got six ovations.
Wow.
We got six ovations. I never had that kind of gig in my life. Six standing ovations. And so we played a whole lot of fiddle music. Like once we ran out of Lucky Day, we're like, hey, Patty, let's play like, you know, all kinds of fiddle tunes. And she had these songs like Willow Springs and all these like really upbeat songs. And we just went over really well. So that was my most interesting story as far as getting a out of the blue message that I, and then of course I got to tell you about the pay. that I didn't expect them to give me 5,000 euros cash right there.
Oh, wow.
But our credit cards were all racked up, and I found out from another friend that basically, actually Calvin Volrath, another person who is on this podcast. And he basically mentioned that when he's gone and played Europe, often it's notorious for not paying people right away. And so we had these credit card balances for 6 months, you know, all of our flights were on there and our food and all this stuff. And it's just like this little nest egg of debt, you know, that was sitting there, you know, and we're trying to just pay off the interest every month and pay a minimum payment. And all of a sudden, in comes this 5,000 euro check, and I'm like, yay. And I went and paid everybody.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It took 6 months.
Well, better late than never, I guess, as we've learned, you know, the travel expenses come in before the money made from the gigs. So it's always good to have some savings around so you can just fund yourself before you get paid back, hopefully. But yeah, we've had some really good shows, and it's always a pleasure to go back to our respective hometowns and play there. Winnipeg has always been a really great place to play, and here in California, you know, there's some really awesome people that are always very supportive, and gradually it feels like there's some other places out there, at least in North America, that are starting to feel like little kind of home away from homes, and hopefully
Well, we had a really good time in the Northeast just last month or a few months.
In November, yeah.
Yeah, we didn't know anybody out there. And, you know, we wound up staying on some friend's floor for like 6 days. that was pretty cool. We made a lot of friends out there. And now next time when we go back, in fact, a lot of the gigs we played, we booked our return gig right after we were done playing. And so we're going to go back there, and they'll be like coming home again for that too. So that's cool.
Yeah, it's sort of all, I don't know, we're rolling. And I hope you enjoyed this second installment. And, you know, I imagine down the road we'll have more tour stories and hopefully more other people that want to contribute. Thanks again to Kara Luft and to Keyless and Cloud for joining us. It's a little hard to get some people in there because I was asking around the holidays here, but there was a few more people that were really interested and just sorry that they didn't have time to get on the podcast. But hopefully maybe down the road we'll do a part three. We'll see. In any case, please go check out those websites for Keyless and Cloud and Kara Luft. And Dan Frechette is at ramblingdan.com. And you can also check out our duo website for our Dan and Laurel duo, which is danandlaurel.ca. My website is laurelthompson.com. That's LAURELTHOMSEN. And please feel free to send me an email if you have any comments, questions, or suggestions for maybe someone to interview or a topic you'd like me to discuss. It could be, you know, obviously something about violin technique or viola technique or something like that, practicing, as well as could be, you know, more general music related. But I'm certainly open to suggestions and helps me keep the ball rolling with the podcast. I have this new vibrato mastery course that I've been promoting and you've probably heard about, but I wanted to give the coupon code again because we still have some spots available for enrollment, and you can go at your own pace. It's about a 3 to 6 month program called Complete Vibrato Mastery, and that's the website, completevibratomastery.com. If you go there and you decide you want to enroll in a lifetime membership of the course, you can use coupon code VIOLINGEEKPODCAST2015 and you can get a nice discount on that. And it's gotten some great reviews so far, so I'm really happy that it's been helping people out there. I guess that's it for now, and we'll see what the next podcast episode is. I've got some interviews sort of waiting in the wings, hopefully, that we can get in here soon. And yeah, just send me some ideas. Definitely need some ideas here. I'll be on tour the next month, so I don't know if anything will be coming out super soon, but we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Maybe something will come up on the road. Until next time, happy practicing.